I knew little of his thoughts during this mad invasion. That he spoke to me now with little prompting was encouraging. The oracle told me so. He smirked at the shock on my face. Death seekers are just as much spellbinders as Asha, though we do not train in their refined arts. We are slaves to many of the customs of the Willows, and also present ourselves to the oracle after ending our own novitiates. I was never one to believe in her myself. But what did the oracle tell you? The Bone Witch stood and murmured something to Princess Yansheo, who still stared with terror at the Eshma. From the window, I could see smoke rising from the fields outside the city, a testament to the previous battle. Below us, the rest of the Deva were at attention. Bored, the Torvi and the Savul yowled and nuzzled and swiped mischievously at each other like lion cubs at play. The Nongate stood proudly. To my horror, I saw more visages creep out from underneath the sags and folds above its neck, so it could scan more of the horizon. From above, I could hear the song of the Azi as it circled the city. The oracle told me that she would kill the prince. I gasped. He smiled again. At least, that was what I thought. My first instinct was to reject her predictions. Magic and runes can be explained, but to my way of thinking, prophecy falls under the realm of con artists and charlatans. My duty was to protect the prince, and to my eyes, Tia was as much a threat as any other. Her predictions were wrong, then? I asked. A small child, too young to understand the danger, approached the Eshma. The spiked Deva turned and regarded the child thoughtfully. It sniffed the boy's fingers and rumbled, a monstrous giggle. The child laughed along with it. His hand stroked at the furred face. His mother turned and cried out in alarm. Immediately, the child abandoned its play, dashing back to her. The Eshma whined and drew its head down, bereft of companionship. No, the oracle was right. Only my interpretation of the words was inaccurate. The oracle bade me to be vigilant, for the next Dark Asha to come to Kion would bring about the death of the person she loved. For many years, I assumed the prophetess referred to the prince. He raised an eyebrow. Funny, isn't it, how that turned out?
9. You would think after the exhaustion that came with scrying, I would have been deterred from using it. Fox thought I was insane.
You can't expect this will get better,
he said as I pored through the pages of the book. It barely phases Ana. I can train till I get to that point, too. If the Faceless thought I could become a powerful spellbinder, that was her one message I was willing to believe. Here, listen to this. I waved the book in my brother's face. It talks about a veiling rune.
That makes as much sense to me as Drichten.
If done right, it can stop anyone from accessing your thoughts and prevent them from using compulsion on you. That got his attention.
What do you need for it?
My fingers ran down the page, tracing the rune inscribed in dark red ink, trying to commit the complicated pattern to memory. After the invocation, I am to formulate any image in my mind like a shield.
A shield?
Or a door, it says. Anything that best represents shutting yourself away from the rest of the world. I don't know if it would affect any bonded familiars.
Can't hurt to try. How long does the spell last?
For as long as you hold the shield in place. It requires some conscious effort at first. But the book says that with enough practice, you can learn to keep those defenses in place even when asleep. I wove the rune in the air and found the image of a closed door worked better for me. I could sense Fox's touch drifting over my mind, carefully testing for weaknesses.
I can't sense anything from you, he reported.
Really? I asked. In that moment, I lost my concentration, and his presence once more flowed easily into mine. This is harder than it looks, I complained.
You think it'll work on me?
Fox asked. I obliged, weaving the rune around him this time. I probed cautiously into his head, but encountered an unbreakable barrier separating our thoughts. I tried pushing forward to no avail.
I guess it works with familiars, too.
I felt the door he was holding in place shift, but remain strong.
It would be a good way to keep you and your three-headed pet out of my head for a change.
Can you sense him?
Just around the edges. It gives me some mild discomfort, like shoes that are getting a little too tight.
How are you not distracted enough to let go of your wall? Fox grinned.
Might have something to do with being dead. You're not too prone to stray thoughts, and it's easier to concern yourself with a bigger picture. It's always been easy for me to compartmentalize.
You would have made a fairly good death seeker, Fox.
Perish the thought. Let's see how long I can hold this up. Any other rune we can take a stab at?
Lee tried the Heartshare rune next. To little effect.
Only for spellbinders, I suppose,
Fox conceded.
Or for the living, anyway. What's next?
I cleared my throat, trying not to act too excited. Well, there was this one spell I've been meaning to talk to you about. He glared at me.
We agreed you wouldn't snoop without me around.
I made no promises about reading them. I placed the book on his lap. See for yourself.
You know I don't understand half the gobbledygook in this.
This one's straightforward enough. I was impressed. His face turned pale as he read, but he never once let the shield in his head lapse. Finally, he looked up.
What does this mean, Tia?
Exactly what you think it means. It was one of the most complicated runes I'd ever seen, a tangle of crisscrossed lines and convoluted angles that made it resemble a thorn bush run amok or a spiderweb caught in an inkblot. While other runes were spelled out in diminutive cursive, this was sprawled across the page in heavy block letters, as if the writer himself was aware of its importance. Resurrecting rune, it said. A rune capable of bringing familiars back from the dead in the truest way possible. I didn't care if the rune had 20 times the complexity of Yadoshin architecture. If I were worth my salt as a bone witch, I was going to learn that spell. Whatever it took. Fox shared neither my enthusiasm nor my excitement. He read the page again with furrowed eyebrows and a clenched jaw.
This is too dangerous, Tia.
The chance of it succeeding is worth the potential risk.
No, it isn't.
He stabbed at the page with one finger.
Have you read what this requires?
I knew. I had spent many hours that morning staring at the page, as if looking long enough could make the task easier on my conscience. Distill the juices of the first harvest into a familiar's heart to take back what death had decreed. Beware, for the first harvest is poison and kills all it touches, Asha and familiar, save for those who possess the black. Reap its fruit and suffer death. We can ask Kala to help. It's possible that—
It says it kills everyone who tries to take it, Tia. It's implying that whoever uses it would require their own life as a sacrifice.
Well, we don't know what a first harvest is yet. I've been looking everywhere, but there's been no mention of it in the books here. But like I said, I'm sure we can find a loophole. Fox slammed his hand on the table with enough force that the wood splintered.
Don't play semantics with me, Tia. Willing or not, you're asking someone to die. And I know exactly who you're volunteering. You are under no circumstances allowed to risk your life for me, Tia. Do you understand?
I wasn't... That was a lie, and he knew it. But the veiling barrier slipped, and I sensed a hodgepodge of his emotions. Shock, worry, determination, anger. More anger than I had ever felt from him. And fear, crippling fear, which I had never felt from him so keenly. Impulsively, I reached over and hugged his middle. I won't. I promise. It's not like we're pressed for time or that you're in any danger. Hey, I'm protecting you too, right? I can't do that if I'm dead. There was a pause. Fox's fist unclenched slowly, and he sighed but returned my hug.
Remember that, brat. You know I'd be lost without you.
I was a fast learner and soon committed most of the runes to memory. For 6 days, we practiced. When we weren't testing the extent of the book's magic, I was fast asleep. But the more I experimented, the less exhaustion I felt. Eventually, we learned to prolong the effects of the Veiling Rune, finding it easier to enforce the same shield in our minds instead of creating our own individual barriers. It became a game of sorts, figuring out how long we could maintain it and which of us could do so the longest. Sometimes I felt the Aussie's presence, though it showed only curiosity at our magic. There was no way we could use the puppet rune on actual corpses, so we made do with rat bones instead. I knotted the threads of magic together like the book instructed, commanded the rats to run from one corner of the room to the next, and let go. We watched as the skeletal rodents scuttled on their own without any further influence on my end. The illusion rune was more complicated. After I learned to bend the spell around an object instead of pouring magic into its essence, I was able to successfully hide it from view. I tried it on Fox.
I don't feel any different,
his disembodied voice reported.
Although it's disconcerting to see that I have no reflection in the mirror.
Stop moving around or you'll be invisible forever. The spell was a little too good. It took me a dozen tries to draw it right, and I got it just as Fox was beginning to worry.
The next time we practice this, he growled as he finally came into view, we're going to use a blasted potted plant instead.
We couldn't practice the Dominion and Strangle runes given their implications, but I studied them regardless. I also found myself going back to the Lights Glass and Shadow Glass spells, though I knew we shouldn't do anything with them. The same held true with the Resurrection rune.
We need to find another way, Tia, Fox said curtly.
And that was that. Spell practice was a good means to keep me distracted from Prince Kansa's impending engagement. Fox never spoke of Vanessa, but every now and then I would catch a thought, a vision of him and the princess walking down Kion's market district at night or sharing mint-seasoned doog at a tea shop. I also sensed he would much rather not talk and so kept my silence. Because of all the preparations leading up to the engagement party, Polair and Althi were constantly busy, much to my relief. I wasn't quite ready to talk to Polair after our fight. Fox had returned to the barracks after our last practice, still keeping a firm hold over the veiling barrier I'd drawn. I went through Einar's book again, but every time I became too engrossed, I felt the barrier starting to slip from my grasp, much to my irritation. It's odd how the spells that seemed easiest were always the ones that required the most discipline. I switched to scrying, determined to master that one. I was still leery of spying on anyone else in the palace, but I finally decided on a target that wouldn't affect my conscience.
I was wondering when you'd try this on me.
Einar's voice drawled in my head, speaking from her dungeon. For all her bravado, I could feel her discomfort. That gave me satisfaction. Why tell me about this book? I asked her. There was nothing for you to gain. She chuckled.
I suppose it was my last card to play. Oddly enough, I like you. You're clever and resourceful and not yet set in the ways of the Asha, though several more years in Kion will surely erode your independence. There are many things Asha cannot do that I can, and your problems will not be solved by the paltry runes your Ashaka teaches.
There is more to you sharing this than you taking a liking to me.
True, Einar replied. I know now that I cannot win you over by guile. That mistake is the reason I am imprisoned here. So I turn to truth where deception has failed. I ask for nothing, Tia. Not for my release from this prison and not for you to join my cause. All I desire is to show you how the Asha have deceived you. I have done many terrible things in my life, sweet child. But your Asha have done worse. And it is time you look at them with new eyes. If you are willing to listen to me, then I will tell you more about the Elder Asha, their machinations, and the more powerful of the runes in my book.
What have the Elder Asha done that make your transgressions pale in comparison?
It was your Asha elders who conspired to hide your sister's heart's glass. You lie. And for what reason? The truth should be easy enough to ascertain. Ask them why they abandoned the search so easily. Ask them why the young King Vanner refuses to speak, even in death. Ask them why Shadowglass interests them so. Ask how Blade That Soars and Dancing Wind's story truly ends. What secrets can you find when you step into Mistress Hestia's study? I quickly broke off the link, more shaken than I wanted to admit. That wasn't possible. She was lying. Why would the elders withhold Michaela's heart's glass? A sudden barrage of emotions that were not my own flooded into my mind, at once unexpected and familiar. The veiling dissipated. Fox had broken his barrier. I scried again and reached out to him, prepared to tease him for the sudden lapse. But it was not the practice fields or straw dummies I saw when my vision refocused. It was the angry, teary-eyed face of Princess Inessa. She was exceptionally lovely. Beautiful from her delicately curved nose to her high cheekbones and smooth, flawless skin. Her bright blue eyes were perhaps her most arresting feature. A rarity for a Kion. Proof of the royal house's ancient ties to the old kingdom of Arhenkosho. And a devastating contrast to her chestnut-colored hair. I can do whatever I want now, can I? I'd never heard the princess speak like this. Her normally pleasant alto was loud and harsh. You have no say over where I go and who I marry.
But it's not your decision, is it?
Fox sounded different, too. His voice was too even from holding back his anger with great effort.
Why can't you be honest for once in your life?
You are the last person to talk to me about honesty, she shot back. We have nothing. We had nothing.
I hunched over, the pain in my chest catching me by surprise. The jolt soon passed. Fox responded without any change in expression.
And that's why you've been watching me at practice for the last 3 weeks.
She reeled back this time, and I could see her heart's glass mist over into blue. She clutched at the collar of her dress.
I haven't...
And now you're to wed the Odalian prince,
my brother continued ruthlessly, much to my dismay.
It's nice to see you free to make your own choices.
The princess lifted her chin.
It was never my decision. But I'm prepared to honor my promises, unlike other people who come to mind.
Honoring your promise to a stranger one moment, honoring it to a prince in the next, and in between, honoring it to every Ahmed, Farshid, and Hamid who so much as looks.
Her slap knocked me to the ground. I blinked up at the ceiling with my cheek burning, but Fox remained upright, watching the princess stomp away. Once she was gone, he said, very quietly.
Tia.
I'm sorry, I squeaked, scrambling to my feet. I wasn't intending to pry. I felt you loosen the barrier and I wanted to-
It's fine. We can talk about it later.
A quiet fox was the saddest thing I'd ever felt. Gently, I disengaged from his mind, but not before his melancholy washed over me. Aimless and drifting. Deliberately, I reached out and sketched the resurrecting rune. I cast no spell, summoned no magic. The elders couldn't have worked this sorcery. Polaire was right. They would never have compromised themselves this way. But if I acknowledged that Aina could be telling the truth, let her tell me more. I sat and watched the rune glittering before me, light as air yet like a millstone around my neck, before I raised my hand again and watched it disappear.
It was Lord Khalad who sounded the warning cry. he grabbed three injured Denorian soldiers from the line of wounded and dragged them out of the room, one after another, with a ferocity I had not expected of him. Stunned, I followed Lord Kaelin and the Bone Witch as they rushed out after him. Princess Yansheo attempted to do the same, but the Death Seeker admonished, "Stay inside, and do not come out until we tell you to. You too, Bard." Still, I lingered by the doorway, ready in my ignorance to protest in the Denorian's defense. "Stay back," the Dark Asha commanded, and the servants loitering in the corridor turned away without another sound. Choking, the soldiers dropped to their knees. One of them cried out, his face contorted in pain. Then his face lengthened, elongating in a way no human face had ever been shaped. With a harsh curse, Lord Kaelin drew his sword, as did the Bone Witch. Limbs burst out of the poor man's back, as the soldier morphed before our very eyes. His body jerked haplessly, bones cracking, until it was as tall as a horse, an emaciated, horrifying creature, with yellow, bulbous eyes and foot-long teeth. I backed away in fright. Something close to recognition flared in its lidless eyes as it turned to the Dark Asha, and she was the first person it chose to attack. Her blade swung true. A stroke severed a twitching limb, and the monster dropped, snarling. A second soldier fell to the ground as a human, but soon rose to its feet a beast, pincers taking the place of a mouth, terrible eyes glowing with a diaphanous sheen. Unlike its brethren, it leaped for the Heart Forger. Ice crackled and slid up its arm. The monster staggered, and Lord Kaelin brought his sword down upon it, shattering the frozen appendage. The beast screamed, but just as quickly, another arm iced over, and another arm was pulverized. The Bone Witch sank her sword into the monster's side. Its hide proved tough, the blade cutting in, but not deeply enough to kill it. The creature swiped at her with its claws, and she spun, switching targets, and driving the steel deep into the back of its head. It shuddered once, twitching, and collapsed. Lord Kaelin finished off his opponent, bringing his sword down on its neck. The final soldier remained in agony on the floor, still in human form. The Asha knelt beside him. Her hands found his, squeezing comfortingly. The man cried a high-pitched plea in Denorian. "I am sorry," the Bone Witch told him, and from behind, Lord Kaelin's sword struck one final blow. Death came quickly, mercifully. The Dark Asha didn't move for some time, staring down at the body before she gently disengaged her hand from his. Back in the throne room, I suspected that the Emperor would have cowered if he wasn't already cornered by the Eshma. She punched him, hard, in full view of his subjects. His head whipped back, and she slammed another fist into his stomach. "Tia!" Princess Yansheo screamed. "Did you do this?" The Dark Asha grabbed the man's hair, pulling his head from the ground. "Did you blight them?"
"No,"
the Emperor gasped, his mouth full of blood. "I killed your lieutenant when he was on the cusp of transforming. My Ozzy devoured him before the blight could be completed. You're lying if you claim to know nothing of this."
"Then kill me, witch," the Emperor rasped. "Take your revenge once and for all."
"I've been inside your mind, you old crone. A quick death is the least you deserve."
"Then what is it that you think I deserve, Bone Witch?"
"Here is a small sampling." The Emperor screamed. It was a long, drawn-out screech, like a soul-shattering, ripping away from its body. His head thrashed, but even that was all the movement he could afford with the Bone Witch standing there, her dark eyes aglow. But she showed no sign that she enjoyed this man's suffering.
"Remember our last meeting? You belittled me for my lack of spine. You said I should not hesitate to dirty my hands if it was the only way."
Her lip curled.
"You must be proud now. Did you choose the Blighted because you knew Bone Witches have no access to their minds?"
"Lady Tia!"
Princess Yansheo's face was pale. "Tia," the Heart Forger said, his face strained. "Stop it."
You told me once that the Emperor deserved to die, Kalad. What makes this moment any different?
Whether my death changes anything is not important, the man said, almost in a whisper. But whether you allow my death to change you is another matter entirely. There was a momentary pause as the Asha released her hold on the Emperor, who fell to his knees before her, still gasping.
Did you cause the blight in these men? She asked again.
No,
the Emperor wheezed, still fighting for breath.
I swear.
Your vows mean nothing to me. Kalad, monitor the rest of the Denorians for any additional changes. Take this filth from my sight.
You're different, Tia, the Heartforger told her, still troubled. She grinned. And it does my heart good, Kalad, to know that you will never change.
10. That evening, the people of Odalia gathered to witness the formal betrothal of the Crown Prince and the First Daughter of Kion. My voice rose over the din of the festivities without much effort.
That was a low blow you took with a princess, I told Fox. Even for you.
No. Maybe.
Fox rubbed his nose.
I wasn't thinking.
You were nicer to what's-her-name. That girl from Tresea you liked who preferred that other jerk, Maharvin.
Her name's Gizabel. I don't know why you remembered that ass's name and not hers. And I didn't know she was a princess when we first met.
Fox's voice was testy. He was clearly eager to end the conversation.
How could you not know she was a princess?
Several people turned to look at us, and I lowered my voice. He colored.
I never paid much attention to royalty.
That's a terrible excuse, and you know it. You're my familiar. How did I not know any of this?
I don't have to tell you everything about my life, Tia.
I wanted to argue that further, but relented. Hadn't I done the same thing regarding the Aussie?
At least tell me how you met Princess Inessa.
He paused.
A public tea house. She was dancing.
Dancing? He fixed his eyes on something in the distance. I could feel the emotions he often kept at bay. How raw they felt.
Even veiled, she held the eyes of every man in the room. She said she had an overbearing mother, and that night was the first time she'd snuck out. I thought she was a merchant's daughter.
I remembered finding Fox in a heated argument with a girl at the palace while I was a novice. I hadn't known her identity to be Princess Inessa until later, and that was over 2 years ago. And you've been seeing each other since then?
Not after this engagement.
Bitterness seeped into him, lodging into my own throat.
Can we talk about something else? Or get away from all this?
He gestured at the revelers.
All this noise is giving me a headache.
A hand landed on my shoulder.
And here's our errand, Asha.
Zoya's voice boomed. Uncaring of the widening circle around us by the crowd wary of Asha, Zoya smoothed the wrinkles on the sleeve of my hua as a smiling Althi appeared beside her.
We've been looking all over for you.
Where's Michaela? I asked.
Resting, on Polaire's orders. She'll be here once the ceremony starts. But she needs to relax until then.
Another figure beside them caught my attention, and my eyes widened.
Lick?
I asked disbelievingly. Unlike the other Asha, who were dressed in elaborate hua and beautiful zavar, he was dressed in the black clothes more typical of death seekers. His long hair was pulled back, and despite his attire, he still looked exceedingly pretty. I bounded over to give him a fierce hug. And he made a soft little squeak at my exuberance.
Have the Ashaka made their decision? I demanded. If you're wearing that because they're forcing you to become a death seeker, then I am going to rip—
Lick shook his head, waving his hand as if that could dissuade my bloodlust.
They'll make their ruling next week, but I thought I ought to get comfortable, just in case.
Though he smiled, his silver heart's glass was an erratic display of blue and silver.
We're not going to give up on you that easily,
Fox told him.
Alfie nodded. We're on good terms with the head of the Death Seekers. Zahid's more flexible than the Association when it comes to rules. If the Prince and Zahid's support is not enough, then we'll figure out some other way.
You always do, Alfie.
We turned to find Michaela standing before us, smiling, her hand on Polaire's elbow and Kaelin following close behind them. Polaire nodded at me, our previous fights still rankling in the air between us.
You are not to wander around on your own in this crowd,
she lectured her best friend. I think Lady Michaela can make her own decisions, I said before thinking. Polaire's eyes flashed fire, but Althea stepped in.
We have other duties to attend to, such as the forming of the guards and seeing to the security.
Polaire's been more domineering lately, I noted sourly after the two had moved off. Michaela seemed amused.
Many of my old tasks she has since claimed responsibility for. Her nose has been in every nook and cranny of the palace, ensuring things run according to plan.
That's a terrifying thought.
It keeps her occupied. She enjoys it, for all her complaints.
But how have you been? I felt guilty. I had been so busy with my responsibilities that I barely had time to talk to Michaela beyond a few minutes each day. I don't want you pushing yourself, Mickey. She ruffled my hair.
I never do. I trust you've been sleeping well yourself.
I made a face. I haven't gone back to the prisons, as much as I want to.
Thank you, Tia. I know that was hard for you to agree to.
I sighed. Can't I... not even one more night so I can...
Tia.
Fine. She laughed.
Shall we go? There's some people I'd like you to meet.
Lady Michaela... Kaelin began, faltering slightly. Lady Polaire told us to stay here.
And I am telling you that I have a small matter to attend to elsewhere.
It was easy to dismiss Lady Michaela's frail condition and forget her forceful character. Her voice took on the tenacity of steel.
It would be a shame to leave you behind, Kaelin.
It didn't take much for him to give in.
But of course, Lady Michaela.
Push over. I murmured in a voice that wasn't as soft as I thought it was, for Kaelin shot an irritated look my way. Zoya grinned.
Waiting is boring anyway.
And Lick? Smiling, the young boy nodded.
Excellent.
I fell into step beside Lick.
How are you holding up?
I whispered. Lick shrugged.
As well as can be expected. Kaelin and the others are nice. Many of the Death Seekers support my appeal. I'm not used to the attention.
His ears colored. The Ashaka are going to see things our way, even if I have to box them around the ears until they do. Lick giggled.
That's a terrible image, Tia.
Tia! Fox!
Our family stood several yards away, waving. My parents looked unchanged, though my dad stooped a little more than I remembered. Wolf and Hawk had gone from chasing each other around my father's forge to becoming bearded blacksmiths like my father. Wolf was even starting his own family, which made my head spin. Beside them, Marigold, Violet, and Lily bloomed like their namesakes. Rose and Lilac, not quite Asha, but my sister witches still, were the same as always. But Daisy had become even more beautiful. My heart ached, knowing how fast they had grown. Was this how Fox felt whenever he had come home on leave from the army?
Yes, my brother murmured.
We were swept up in a sea of hugs and kisses, my siblings surrounding us.
You rarely write,
Hawk complained, clapping his oldest brother on the shoulder.
You used to write enough to fill a book when you were in the army, but then practically nothing after you and Tia left for Keon.
He turned to grin at me then. They all did. A little odd as I stood in my hua with its delicately embroidered waist wrap. What money Fox or I could save, we always sent their way. But I was self-conscious that my outfit cost more than what my family normally made in a year.
Lady Michaela was kind enough to invite us for the ceremony,
Marigold said happily.
So many people! It's like solstice back at home, Only the dresses are prettier.
I got a new heart for the occasion, Daisy informed me proudly, displaying a gorgeously intricate heart's glass around her neck, gleaming red. I groaned. Daisy.
What? I dumped him because he was a louse. I wish I had a pretty silver heart's glass of my own.
Ever the opportunist, she turned to smile brightly at Kaylin.
Aren't you going to introduce me to your friend, Tia Bunny?
Growing older hadn't altered who my family was. Had I changed to them? Did they still see me as the 12-year-old with her head constantly in a book, or did they see me as an Asha? Because I had changed. I wasn't the girl they remembered. Would they be afraid of me if they knew the runes I wove? If they knew the monsters I'd raised? Would the girl they knew have hidden an Ozzy in her mind and told no one? I knew the answer to that. And it hurt. I was a puzzle piece that no longer conformed to the shape of their lives. Thank you, Michaela, I whispered as my family joined the rest of the Asha. She smiled. I know how difficult it is to be away from family. I had no time to voice more of my gratitude when my parents descended upon me.
You're not eating right, my mother fretted. Have they been feeding you well? Are you working too much?
Please, Mama, I mumbled. My father was a man of few words.
We've missed you, Tia,
he said in his low rumble, and I blinked back tears. I'm sorry I haven't been able to visit.
We heard about you putting down Deva.
Worry colored my father's heart's glass. I'm protected. The Death Seekers and the King's soldiers make it a point to accompany me. And Fox, of course. The prince even accompanied me once.
The prince!
My mother clapped a hand over her heart.
Lady Michaela told me she would introduce us to him today. Imagine that! Never in my lifetime did I think we would meet the king and his son.
Everyone's excited.
My father cast a glance back at Daisy and Kaylin and added dryly,
Even your oldest sister, although I suspect it's for a different reason.
To set Daisy loose in a room full of eligible noblemen was always a bad idea. I hesitated. On one hand, it was amusing to see Kaylin looking out of sorts. On the other, he had been nicer to me as of late. Fox approached, knowing the plan that ran through my mind. My parents turned delightedly to him as he began introducing the other Asha.
Perhaps one of the king's soldiers can show you around the city,
Kaylin said as I headed for Daisy.
But I feel much safer with you,
Daisy persisted, her hand tightening on Kaylin's arm. I felt a twinge of irritation. This was moving too fast, even for her.
He's right, Daisy,
I said cheerfully, worming my way between the two, taking great care to remove my sister's hand from Kaylin's as I did. My sister glared daggers at me.
Lord Kaylin is a high-ranking member of the Death Seekers. What little time he can spare, he spends with me.
With you?
It was my turn to grab Kaylin's arm, pulling him away.
You can have your pick of suitors in Neve, Daisy, but it would be nice if you could leave mine alone.
Kaylin's mouth was working soundlessly. I stepped on his foot, warning him not to speak.
Goodness!
Daisy's hand flew to her mouth, looking both surprised and pleased.
Really? Well, you never mentioned—
I looped Kaylin's arm around my neck and snuggled closer to him.
It's not like we want to announce it to everyone, but our relationship is not forbidden. Right, my love?
I poked Kaylin in the ribs. The Death Seeker coughed.
Oh, Tia! My little sister is growing up so fast!
Daisy clapped her hands in delight. She'd gone from flirt to doting sister in less than a second.
My apologies, Lord Kaylin. I haven't seen Tia Bunny in such a long time, and I still see her as the shy girl she always was. So you really do love him, Tia?
I planted as genuine a smile in my face as I could muster.
Of course. I've never been so sure of anything in my life.
I tugged hard at his sleeve. Kaelin was selling this poorly, and Daisy would be sharp enough to figure it out.
Agreed.
Kaelin's voice sounded so strange that I had to peek up at him to see if he was all right. The next thing I knew, his grip around my shoulders tightened, and he pressed his lips against my cheek. It was like a jolt of lightning lanced through my skin. I jumped, though it was not an entirely unpleasant shock, and Daisy looked satisfied.
My apologies, Lord Kaelin. Tia Bunny, I can see he's quite smitten. Ooh, Marigold and Lily will be so thrilled to hear.
Wait, I shouted, to no avail. Daisy was already dashing over to my sister's.
Tia Bunny.
Shut up, I hissed. What did you do that for?
I thought you wanted me to be convincing, he hissed back. And whatever possessed you to say we were in a relationship?
Daisy has a lot of bad habits, but she would never chase after a guy who's already taken. I stepped out of his reach. Look, since you're clearly uncomfortable, let's just pretend this never happened. I'll deal with my sister. I was spared from making a further fool of myself by the trumpets sounding as the ceremony began. My family looked on in awe as both Prince Kontz and Princess Inessa stepped into view. I could feel a faint tightening in the corners of Fox's thoughts, his heart's glass gleaming too brightly to be natural. I reached for his hand and squeezed lightly. After a moment, he squeezed back. Together, we watched them formalize their betrothal. They exchanged heart's glass, as was the custom, a symbol of their commitment to one another. And I felt my own heart's glass flicker when the prince leaned over and kissed the princess, concluding the celebrations. The party was in full swing by the time I entered the throne room, where dignitaries from most of the kingdoms mingled. Prince Kant smiled, catching sight of me as I entered.
I've been looking for you all evening,
he said, folding his hands over mine, as was his habit. Are you feeling all right, Your Highness? His face looked pale again.
Kontz, he corrected me.
Not today. A formal engagement in a public setting. Calling you by your first name wouldn't be appropriate.
Then at least let me apologize.
That's not necessary, Your Highness.
It is to me, he said earnestly. I wanted to tell you personally about the engagement, but I didn't quite know where to begin. After all my talk about taking command of my own life, this reeks of the worst hypocrisy.
That doesn't matter, Your Highness. The prince shook his head, and his heart's glass shone a somber blue.
It does. First Dricht, and then the situation with Lick, and now my engagement. Father's been impossible all week.
He stopped, his eyes unfocused. Your Highness? He snapped out of his strange reverie, blinking rapidly.
What was I saying?
I think you need to excuse yourself from the celebrations, Your Majesty. You're not well. You haven't been well since before the Ashma hunt.
You're right. Perhaps after greeting the rest of the guests.
He sighed.
I haven't even talked to Inessa tonight.
Do you love her, Your Highness? I asked softly, fearing what he might answer. He hesitated.
I think I could grow to love her.
That was a consolation. If you truly believe that she can make you happy, talk to her about your engagement. You owe each other that much. Prince Kontz smiled wryly.
I agree. I should.
And I have something that could help you with your exhaustion. Khalid made it. I reached into the folds of my robe. The prince's birthday was in 3 days, but now seemed as good a time as any. The prince brightened at the sight of the small glass pendant sparkling under the bright lights of the throne room.
I'll keep it with me at all times.
He bent his head and pressed his lips against the back of my hand.
Thank you, Tia. You helped me understand that there's more to a kingship than sitting on a throne.
It's nothing, Your Highness. My throat constricted. And my best wishes on your engagement, Prince Kontz. I hope you and the princess will be happy together.
A melancholic smile appeared on his face.
Thank you. I wish I could...
Your Highness.
A courtier materialized by his elbow.
The king wishes to speak to you.
Let's talk later, Lady Kia, Prince Kant said, exhaling. Please excuse me.
I watched him stride to where King Telamane and his Princess Anessa waited and turned away. Polaire and the others were busy entertaining, something I was also supposed to be doing. This was a nobles-only event, so Fox was somewhere else in the palace with the rest of my family. I was on my own.
You look like a little thundercloud hovering in the middle of a field of sunshine.
I bit back a sigh and faced Kaelin. I'm flattered you made all this effort to keep the thundercloud company.
I was in the middle of a boring conversation with the Earl of Hydus. You were an escape.
There's something else eating at you. I nodded at his heart's glass. Do you want to talk about it? He paused. Nodded. I followed his gaze to his father, the Duke of Holzrath, who sat at the farthest table from the crowd, a drink in one hand and a small smirk on his face. Everyone pointedly ignored him, and the large coterie of guards around him was proof he was still a prisoner. He looked gaunt, undoubtedly from his time in the dungeons, though his hair and beard were freshly trimmed. He resembled Kaelin on a superficial level, but I disliked him at first sight.
I want him out of here, Kaelin said stiffly. If it wasn't in direct conflict with the king's orders, I would have...
He stopped at the sound of breaking glass. Heads turned toward the throne. A glass had slipped from Prince Kant's hand. He was ashen. He took two steps forward, his mouth forming my name before he collapsed on the floor. I rushed forward, but Kaelin was quicker, reaching his side before King Telamane.
Send for a doctor!
The king roared. Prince Kantz took a deep, shuddering breath. His eyes met mine. Then Kaelin's.
Protect her,
he whispered. Helpless to do anything else, the Death Seeker could only nod. The prince smiled at him and then at me before the light in his heart's glass went out.
It was chaos, the Asha said, reminiscing. I remembered little else of that night, only faces hovering over us, Kaelin yelling at them to stay back. It was terrifying to feel so helpless. I knew there was nothing I could do, yet I was convinced I'd overlooked some danger at the party. You did everything you could, Tia. The Heartforger's equipment had been sent for, and it was a strange collection of tools. Different glass containers of miscellaneous sizes and shapes stood on a row before the throne. Oddly colored liquid sloshed in many of these vials, bubbling and hissing, and resembling no form of water I was familiar with. There was also an apparatus built like a pottery wheel, but with more spikes and petals than seemed necessary. The Heartforger ran his hands lovingly over it, inspecting every hollowed nook. A cooing noise came from by the window. The Torvi's giant eye peered quizzically down at us, and it sang a few short notes. Lady Tia, I whispered, you cannot treat the Denorian Emperor this way. He is a horrible emperor, Bard. Disdain marked her voice. He did many terrible things. Lady Tia. This time it was Princess Yansheo pleading. I do not know what impels you to treat my kinsman so poorly, but I beg of you, whatever your quarrel with him, he is still the ruler of this kingdom, and he is my liege, however badly he has treated me. Denoris does not deserve such punishment. But the Asha shook her head. Kings and emperors need the people more than the people need them, princess. Kings are kings only because one ancestor was quicker than another to place a crown on his own head. Bravery and courage are not passed down through blood. Kings and emperors do not require valor or good works. All they require is submission. But there is no one else fit to rule, milady. In Odalia, They tell us that all men are made in blade that soars his image, and all women in dancing winds. What claim would he possess to hold the crown better than yours, princess?
11. For 2 days, a line of worried doctors traipsed into the prince's bedchamber and traipsed back out again armed with conflicting diagnoses. King Telamane held a vigil by his bedside, but not even Princess Anessa or Lady Michaela was allowed entry. I divided my time between waiting anxiously in the hallway and sitting in my room, desperately searching for something, anything, within Einar's faceless book that could help the prince.
What good are you?
I finally sobbed, flinging it in a brief fit of rage. What was the use of scrying in puppets when they couldn't save the prince? Kaelin had taken the events worse than I had and was reduced to pacing Kansa's hallway, rejecting food and rest.
I can't think about eating at a time like this, Tia.
He looked like he hadn't slept since the prince collapsed. You'll become as sick as His Highness without anything in your stomach. I shoved bread into his hands. Do they even know what's happened to Prince Kans? Giving in to my bullying, Kaelin accepted a piece.
Nothing yet.
Why not ask Althea to help? She's the best healer among the Asha. Kaelin sighed.
Politics. Lady Altesia is a Kion Asha, and as friendly as they are, to ask for help from a neighboring kingdom is a sign of weakness.
But not at the cost of the prince's life, I insisted.
I wouldn't put my son's life over the needs of the kingdom.
For all his bulk, King Telamane could walk silently when he wished to. Kaelin jerked to attention.
Lady Michaela, however, has taken a look at him. Even she was at a loss.
Can't we do anything? I pleaded. He smiled kindly at me, though his eyes were heavy with fatigue.
It warms my heart to know that Kans has friends he can trust. But his illness is beyond our understanding. The doctors can find nothing wrong with him, save for his heart's glass turning an unusual gray. All he does is sleep.
Dread seized my gut. Gray? He won't wake up?
So they say. The best doctors in the kingdom, and they have no idea. Lady Tia?
I was already backing away. I'm sorry, Your Highness. I have to go. I tore down the hallway, heart pounding. A sleeping sickness. Where had I heard that before? Kaelin caught up to me easily as I reached the gate. Fox, so attuned to my emotions, was already there astride chief. My horse familiar pawed at the ground, eager to be off.
Where are you going, Tia?
Kaelin yelled behind me.
To see Kalad!
I vaulted onto chief, who was intelligent enough to pick up on my thoughts. Soon, we were cantering into the city, leaving the Death Seeker staring after us. Kalad was hunched over another one of his creations when we burst into the room. He started, but deftly caught the delicate heart's glass before it fell.
Please knock next time, Lady Tia, he said sternly. This new heart has a very rare memory. It's not every day you find one over 100 years old.
Prince Kans is ill, Kalad, I gasped out. They say it's a sleeping sickness.
Kalad's eyes widened, his expression suddenly stricken.
Kans is sick?
He has been for 2 days. His heart's glass turned gray right before my eyes. Wasn't that a symptom of the sleeping sickness the old forger was investigating?
He flushed.
But that's impossible. The master was certain there would be no such cases in Odalia.
That's not how illnesses work, my brother objected.
Kalad rummaged through a pile of books in one corner of the room, returning with several parchments.
Master conducted a thorough investigation,
he explained, unrolling one of the parchments.
There have been 4 known incidents so far. Baron Siren of Astera, age 23. He went to bed one night and couldn't be woken the next morning.
He uncovered another.
The Earl of Mansur, from Arun Kosho, age 38.
He was out hunting boar when he suddenly toppled off his horse. Here's another. A royal princess from the House of Wei Shu, of Denoris, age 16. She fell unconscious in the middle of a ball.
Khalid swiftly unfurled the last parchment.
The Marquise of Thon, one of the smaller city-states of Yodosha. The Marquise was 67, though still in good health. He drifted off while giving a speech. None could be roused. Their hearts glass a muted gray.
Different ages, all of noble blood. Physically healthy, I said, scanning through the reports. But they don't seem to have anything else in common.
There is one attribute. Khalid sounded grim. Master said they were all descendants of the five great heroes.
That's... I opened my mouth and closed it again, remembering. To you, seeking blade that soars path, take that which came from five great heroes long past and distill into a heart of silver to shine anew.
Mithra the Protector.
Fox ticked them off with his fingers.
Ashi the Swift. Anahita the Mighty. Roshnu the Just. And Srausha the Obedient. But how can the Heart Forger be so sure?
Because he can see their bloodlines in their heart's glass. Khalid touched his.
So can I. It's difficult, but not impossible. Master had long suspected that someone was targeting their descendants, but he didn't know why. The only great hero descendant left untouched by the sickness is Anahita the Mighty.
Khalid sighed.
My father, King Telamane, isn't a direct descendant, however. Neither was Vanner or Lance, the Duke of Holzrath.
But Prince Kantz is, I burst out, remembering. And so are you. Khalid blinked.
My master had reason to examine both Vanner's and Telamane's heart's glass in the past. They do not have your mother's ancestry,
Fox broke in.
Remember when Tia accidentally resurrected King Randrel? Randrel claimed that the Crown Prince was not his son, but the son of the commander of the Odalian army. Vanner's and Telamane's lines did not spring from his, but your mother was also a descendant of Anahita.
I hadn't thought about my mother's line, Khalid muttered, looking embarrassed. But surely that would not have escaped my master's notice. Could it be that he said nothing to spare you the worry? I asked.
It's possible. He was terribly secretive about his conclusions until I pestered him.
Khalid leaped to his feet and began stuffing papers and other equipment into a large sack.
But I have to be sure. I need to take a look at my brother's heart's glass.
Can you cure him? Khalid shook his head, despairing.
Master talked about having tested one, but he gave few specifics.
Do you know where he is?
He'd gone to Denoris to take another look at the sleeping princess. He found her death the most suspicious of the lot.
Why?
Denorans don't wear heart's glass. They've always been suspicious of magic, although their current emperor is quite keen on Asha and has been infatuated with Anessa for years. Someone would have needed to draw Heart's Rune for the Denoran to fall sick in the same way the others had.
For now, let's return at the castle to ensure Khalid's safety as well,
Fox decided.
Me?
Might I remind his lordship,
Fox told him quietly, laying stress on the last word,
that though you have officially abdicated from the royal succession, you are still Khans's brother, so you can still be reinstated. Should anything happen to the prince, I doubt that your father will allow you to remain the Heart Forger's apprentice for much longer.
I was shocked to see the throne room full of soldiers as we entered. It felt like the whole Adalian army was waiting for us.
Tia!
Kaelin's voice rang out. He was being restrained by some of the soldiers.
Get out of here!
I took a step back but found my path barred by swords. Two men stepped forward to place their hands on my shoulders. Two more took hold of my wrists.
What's going on?
Fox asked, stunned.
Albi? Parviz? Why are you doing this?
I felt his anger, felt him struggling behind me. His eyes flicked to his commander.
General Lode?
The older man shook his head. His heart's glass showed me his reluctance,
his implacability. Good soldiers obeyed orders. The Duke of Holzrath stepped forward. He was smiling, and his heart's glass glittered a bright, malicious red.
We haven't been properly introduced.